Hello, this is Tom Heck with TeachMeTeamwork.com, and on the line with me today is my friend Chris Salamone, who is the founder and chairman of Lead America, which is the nation's most respected youth leadership organization. And when I say most respected, you're going to understand by the time we're done with this interview here today, because Chris is doing some amazing things with youth. And specifically, he has trained more than 50,000 young people in team and leadership development. And he is committed to transforming our world's next generation of leaders, which is why I'm having this interview with Chris today, because he has done such amazing things with young people that I believe that you, the listener, are going to learn a lot about what it takes to really create leadership opportunities for young people. So, Chris, welcome to the call.
Tom, thank you so much. It's great to be with you today.
Well, so 19 years ago, this Lead America started with a dream that you had, and I got to give a little bit of background here. You played college basketball, you're an attorney, and somewhere in here you got the idea that where your life's path was is in helping young people become stronger leaders. Tell us real briefly how that came to be.
Sure. It's an interesting mix when you put them all together, but I think it's very true. When each of us reflects back, I think when we look back at our lives, more so than even when we look forward, when we look back at the path that we've taken, we really are very logically exactly where we should be based upon the steps that we've taken in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm pretty much exactly where I'm supposed to be based upon education, experience, and the things that I have done. And really where this began, the short version, is it started really before I was born, when my father began the very first basketball camp in the United States over 50 years ago. And I grew up in this camping environment with sports camps, basketball, field hockey, soccer, co-ed sports camps. So I grew up in this environment that was really about coaching. And so my entire mentality as a young person and then through college, and when I went to college on a basketball scholarship, was not so much about telling people what to do, but about coaching them, about taking people with certain sets of skills and how do you make them better. And that's what we do with athletes. That's why it's called coaching. And so it began with that. And when I came out of law school, I saw this real need for young people to have something more than just simply spending their summers and their time off doing the standard thing that students do. And we particularly focused, Tom, on the student who was doing well in school already, the young person that you know, most people said, well, they get great grades, they're going to do fine anyway.
Mm-hmm.
That student's an A student or a B student, they're going to be terrific. And there wasn't a lot of focus put onto that student. And so what we did is we created this series of leadership programs for these young people, where they have a place to go and they can be with other like-minded, like-situated students, but yet from very diverse backgrounds, and they can really absorb themselves into a leadership culture where they spend a week to 2 weeks with us learning about themselves, most importantly, how to become better as leaders, how to become better as citizens, how to become better as people.
And what I'm excited about with Lead America is that you're really pulling in kids and changing their lives, it seems like, in a short period of time. I could go over some of these, the letters of references, you know, that you can find on your website, and then you have all the letters from different government agencies and representatives, and you know, one here from the president. And so I think for our listeners, what I'd like them to understand is, what makes Lead America tick? What makes Lead America work? Why are kids showing up, kids, young people, showing up, and these are middle school and high school students, and they're having these experiences about leadership? Why are they leaving with such positive responses and reactions to what you're doing?
Well, you know, Tom, it's an amazing thing when you put a group of young people together and then you put them in an environment that has as its sole purpose,
mm-hmm,
to inspire and make these young people better. And so we've spent a lifetime, and I have spent a lifetime, really trying to figure out what makes young people tick,
mm-hmm,
what makes them get excited about their future. And really, they're no different than you and I at our ages. If we put a series of magazines on a table, we would all gravitate maybe to a different one. One might gravitate to Sports Illustrated, another one to Mademoiselle, another one to a different magazine. So everyone has their own sort of thing that makes them really get excited. And what we've done is we believe that students learn best when they are interested and excited about first the topic that they are learning about.
Mm-hmm.
So the first thing we did at Lead America was we created a series of topic-specific or career-focused, if you will, leadership conferences so that leadership is not taught just in a blank sort of vacuum, but rather it's taught within the context of a certain topic, because one is not just a leader. They're generally a leader within a given field or within a given experience that they're having. So students can come to Lead America and they can study at the Congressional Student Leadership Conference, they can study government and politics, but they're learning about leadership within that context. They can study medicine, but they're not just learning about medicine, they're learning about leadership within the context of medicine. What does it take to be an extraordinary leader within that context? And of course, even if they go on and they do something else with their lives, with many students do change fields and change interests, those skills and those things that they learn are going to translate into the other things that they do in their lives.
Okay.
So the first thing we do is we try to get them attached to a topic that they're very interested in.
Okay, so students come to these Lead America events from all over the country. I guess what have you seen about these young people's understanding about what leadership is and isn't, and what kind of shifts take place to create a stronger leader? Because I'm guessing that, you know, someone who's never been to a leadership, you know, an intense program like you've got, comes in with certain understandings or beliefs about what they believe, you know, leadership is and isn't, and then all of a sudden they get into these situations and then a shift happens and growth happens. Have you seen patterns? I mean, having worked with 50,000 people or students and served that many, I'm guessing that you can probably anticipate some things that happen.
Oh, yeah, without a question. And, you know, what you see is that a lot of students come in, and I think that's just natural. They come to these types of programs thinking that leadership is really a position. It's positional leadership. So, you know, if they're voted class president, that's a position of leadership. And so it's something that is somehow bestowed upon them by other people, as opposed to something that is internal. One of our core sort of principles and philosophies that we focus on, we do not focus on motivating students. Our goal really is much different, because I think there's a big difference between motivation and inspiration. We try to inspire students. Inspiration comes from the inside. Motivation comes from the outside. So are the things they do motivational? Are the speakers they hear from? Sure, of course. You hear the Secretary of State speak to you, you're motivated about that. But at the same time, we want students to be inspired. So we try through the various simulations, and we'll talk more about those, and the way that we instruct students and the way that we put them through these programs, we try to inspire them to really find what is their purpose, what is their mission, what are their core values, what is it that they stand for in life. And what's amazing is once a young person really understands and believes who they are and what they stand for, everything else falls into line. It's very difficult to take a student down the wrong path when they're very sound and solid in belief of who they are and what they stand for. Once they know their core values and they feel it inside, it's who they become, the word be, as opposed to just do, who they become as a leader. So they come in with this positional thing, this positional concept, but they leave understanding that it's really about how they conduct themselves.
How they show up.
And how they show up.
Yes. So as these young people come in, and one of the things I love about your program is that you're drawing from all over the country, so it's, you get a real melting pot. You know, when I look at the photographs of the students who are enrolling in your programs, what is it that you're hearing, you know, having worked for 19 years in this field, what have you seen any changes in what students are interested in or what they're concerned about? You know, we as I read the paper, and follow this generation of leaders, I wonder where they're going to be taking us, you know, what changes that they would like to see happen versus, like, you know, maybe the boomers and Xers.
Right. Absolutely. There are a number of things that I think are different than they were a generation or two ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, pragmatically speaking, Tom, they're concerned about college from a pragmatic standpoint,
mm-hmm.
right? They want to prepare themselves for college. They want to build their resume. They want to, you know, they want to be able to get into a competitive college, and they know that the admission process is a competitive one. And so, you know, they understand that they have to do well in school, and they need to do things that set them apart. So from a pragmatic standpoint, that's what they're. But they're also concerned more about meaning and how do I make my mark on the world. Now, the difficulty in working with young people these days, I think, is that they want to have that result immediately. They have a very much of a cause and effect, and they want to do something, and they want to see the immediate results of that.
It's sort of like the video game, you know, aspect where you do this and there's an immediate response, and as opposed to, are you saying, working over a long period and not seeing any changes?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, you know, in prior generations, in my dad's and our, you know, our parents' generation, it was about, you go to work, you work very hard, you stay with the same company for a long
right.
period of time,
right.
and you build in that company. You understand that growth comes over time and by having consistent excellence every single day. Young people have a little different attitude. They have an attitude toward that says, hey, I'm smart. I don't need to prove myself to you. I should have the position first, and then I'll prove that I'm, you know, that I'm good at that. Now, that's not a good or a bad. It's just the reality of the way that students are thinking. So as we deal with young people, you have to realize that that's the mentality that they enter with.
So how does that affect leadership? I mean, your training, because what you're saying is that they're looking for an immediate gratification or immediate change, where leadership is not always about immediacy. It's you know, there's long term, there's relationship building, and mm-hmm. so how do you what are some of the key things that to teach young people who are coming from that place? How do you train up leaders?
Well, you know, it is one of the more difficult things to have to instill in a young person, is this sense of patience, persistence, in order to accomplish the things that they want to accomplish. As I tell students, I've never seen an overnight success story that was not a 10-year overnight success story. And,
right.
and no matter what we read about, because you know you read the headlines in the newspaper, and it's, you know, AOL and Steve Case, and he did it all, you know, overnight, and, you know, Google happened, and yesterday morning they were nothing, and today they're billionaires, and it didn't happen that way.
Right.
And so what we try to do is really have them understand realistically, how does greatness happen? And leadership and greatness go hand in hand. We talk a lot about, you know, who wants to achieve greatness in their life. And greatness, just like leadership, leaves clues. And so if we can have them understand, here's how people have exhibited and have grown into greatness throughout time, it really hasn't changed that much. True greatness comes not just from what you accomplish, but from the way that you accomplish it, right? It's a journey, and it's an everyday working at it to become better. And it's reminded me of something John Quincy Adams said, which is, you know, leadership is really about, is something different than people think. If your actions, he said, inspire others to dream more, learn more, do more, and become more, then you're a leader. And that's not just something that happens in a second. So
mm-hmm.
we, again, inspire by putting inside to a student this understanding that leadership is a lifelong journey, and it's not about them. I think that's the other important thing. Once you realize and come to understand that leadership is not about you, it's not about me, it's about our place in the world, and as John Quincy Adams said, how do we make other people better?
Okay, so how do for anyone listening to this recording, and they're working with young people, what have you learned about creating an environment that makes leadership development and learning about leadership and teams How does one go about creating the best learning environment? And before we started the recording here, I also said that I would like to pull in this other part about creating your team that's delivering this, so the hiring of it. So I'm curious about tips that you can give people, educators, anybody who's working with young people, about what are the key components about creating an optimal learning environment?
Sure. Well, I think there are several things that come into play when you do that. I mentioned one before, which is, and in school, this is, you know, it fits very well into a school environment, which is students have to gravitate and grasp onto something. There has to be something that gets their interest, that they say, okay, this is why it's relevant to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think one thing is to find something that makes it relevant to them. And whether that's socially, whether that's spiritually, whether that's topically, career-wise, they gravitate when they feel something is then relevant.
And does it ever happen in your experience where someone, you know, shows up at Lead America and says, "Well, I'm doing this because, you know, I needed to get it on my resume so I can get into a college."
But happens all the time.
Yeah, and then they get there and they say, "Wow, okay, this, I'm actually learning something here." So I think the reason I bring this up is because, like you say, some people, you might have an agenda where you want to create this really great learning environment about leadership, and someone's still going to show up with their own agenda.
Sure. Here's the interesting thing, Tom. We have as our mission, inside our four walls of our organization, our mission is to change the world through our youth and to make the world a better place.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if the cover of a piece of literature said, "We want to change the world and make the world a better place," probably no one would come. maybe a couple, but
right.
not the 50 to 60,000 students that have gone through these programs over the last 18 years.
Right.
So we try to find that special hook, if you will, that thing that piques a student's interest. And then we can do the things that we know are important. And you're right, and this is what always happens. They come with their own agenda, with their own idea of, you know, on the rare occasion, mom or dad wanted them to go.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, they want to go. Yeah, they want to meet some other cool kids. They want to put something great on their resume. They want to earn college credit because all the courses are college accredited. It's one of those. And what they leave is they leave finding that they have been changed from the inside forever, that they're just different. And it reminds me of a story of a mother who called me a couple of years ago, and she said, "You know, my husband and I were waiting at the airport, and my son got off the plane, and as he walked toward us in baggage claim, I looked at my husband, and our son hadn't said a word, and I looked at my husband and I said, 'He's different.'"
Mm.
He just showed up different.
And you don't do that by talking to. I think this is the big thing that I want to get into, is that it's not just about lectures that they hear at Lead America. There's something you've developed, a system that includes lectures, but there's another piece here that I'd really like our listeners to get, is that it's not just about sitting down and cracking open the book.
Absolutely. And let me say there's really several aspects to that, and we can talk about each one of them. But the first, and it's, if I may just digress to what you had originally asked, which is, how do you build the right environment?
Mm-hmm.
It really begins with the people. And I always have been a believer, it's always about people. And so what we are trying to develop in these young people is that they become the right people for whatever it is that they want to pursue. But for us, we have to have the right people with the right attitudes. And so it begins by creating a staff, a group of people who are completely aligned with our mission, who are completely aligned with our vision, who bring the right attitudes. We can teach them the topics, we can teach them the procedures for making sure that students remain safe, but we have to make sure that we align their vision and their mission is what our vision and our mission is.
And how do you do that? How do you, when you are looking at somebody and someone says, "Hey, I'd like to work at Lead America," or "Join this team, join the Lead America team," how does one go about assuring that alignment is there?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's two things, really. One is through the interview process. So we really do have to look at what people have done. We look for people who give us some inklings of their mentality that they, and I call it a service mentality.
Mm-hmm.
Really, people who are going to fit into this type of a program from a mentoring and a staff standpoint are people who have that type of service mentality. And teachers who listen to this know exactly what I'm talking about, because teachers have that service mentality. They wouldn't be teaching if they didn't have that mentality already.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They'd be more interested in, well, how do I make more money? How do I do? They're mission driven to begin with. And so mm-hmm. we look for people who are mission driven. So we look for things in their, you know, in their bios and their resumes, and through interviewing them, what is it that makes you tick? What is it that inspires you? And once you find out what makes a person excited, and if you find out that it's really about helping other people, making other people better, being in service to other people, then you know you have someone with that kind of an attitude.
Mm-hmm.
And the red flag, so what
are the red flags? So what I'm trying to do here, Chris, is that a lot of people who are listening to this are also in the position of building their team. And so you've thousands of people you've had to hire during these summer programs, primarily their summer programs. So what is a red flag for you? It's like, oh gosh, you know, you've tried to make that work before, but it doesn't work.
Well, you know, I think what happens is sometimes people who are very much caught up strictly in their credentials.
Hmm.
And so we have a lot of college students and graduate students who, and not that credentials are not important, but where it's strictly about them. They've worked solely in environments that don't involve team. So, you know, red flag for us are, you know, people who have, you know, sat in a research laboratory and done research on their own for, you know, a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
They don't tend to gravitate into community activities. You know, we asked them, what do you do as far as community activities? Are you involved in your, you know, in whatever it is, your church, your synagogue, things like that?
Mm-hmm.
Where you look for people who are predisposed. They already, their life experience has led them to want to be part of a team, wants to make other people better, wants to be in service to others. So we look for those kinds of indicators through things that they've done, not just in their work, but mostly
mm-hmm.
outside of work.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, someone takes a job as a, you know, working in a bookstore, they have a job as a doctor or as a lawyer, doesn't necessarily mean they are not really akin to, you know, relationship building and akin to leadership development.
So tell us, those are some of the things of hiring and building your team to deliver this. So talk to us more about creating that optimal learning environment.
Sure. As far as the students go in creating a learning environment, the first thing that we do with our students is that we let them know that it's okay. It's okay to be themselves. We don't judge students. I mean, they're not getting graded at our program, so of course in school there's always that issue of, you know, they're getting graded. Now, I guess to some degree they are, because it's college accredited, so
right.
They either pass or they don't. But there's no one judging them for who they are. So they come, at least to Lead America, they come with a clean slate. And I think when a student feels safe, when they feel safe
mm-hmm.
to be who they are, everything is possible with them. And the way I say it to our staff when we're going through, and we have a 1 week long training program, which really is its own leadership training for our staff, because we have to make them the kind of leaders, again, aligned with our vision,
mm-hmm.
is we have a little mantra, which is no one cares how much you know until they know how much you care.
Yes.
And once a student really believes that you care about them,
mm-hmm.
You can say almost anything. And it may not be the exact right thing, but they're going to understand the place that it's coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And you can accomplish so much more.
So creating the, really what you're saying is the rapport, is that there's got to be a rapport between the staff and the participants to the degree that that's where you're building your trust. So without the trust, that's the number one thing that you're looking for to build immediately between the staff and the
yes.
and the students. Yeah,
absolutely. That's the starting place.
Okay. And this is, by the way, one of my favorite authors is a guy named Patrick Lencioni, and he wrote a book called The Five Dysfunctions of a Team.
Mm-hmm.
And he says the number one dysfunction of a team is the lack of trust. And Stephen M. R. Covey wrote a book called The Speed of Trust, came out this year. And the whole book is about, you know, building trust. So I think a lot of people who want to really move fast and do great things with young people, what they got to first take a look at is exactly what you've done, is build trust. How do we build trust?
Exactly.
So where do you go from there? Again, it's not all lecture. Tell us about the experiential components of what you're doing.
Sure. You know, it's interesting. Teachers, I think there's probably very little that would surprise educators today because they're on the front lines and they see so much. But what I can tell you that I think is very interesting is that students really thrive, I have found, when they're given the opportunity to integrate their sort of factual classroom learning and knowledge into real-world experience.
Mm-hmm.
And what we try to do at Lead America is to give context to what teachers are accomplishing with students in the classroom, and they're building their intellect and you know, building some of their thinking skills and whatnot. And so what we do at the core of every one of our programs is experiential learning.
Mm-hmm.
We believe, while it's not experiential per se, is not the greatest form of learning. I think teaching is the greatest form of learning. But we put students in situations where they then take on the role of whatever it is they're studying. So as an example, if they're studying in our medicine and healthcare program, they take on the role of a physician or part of a healthcare management team. And actors come in and they play the role of patients. And so they begin by, they have to interview these patients to get all the information they have to get. Now, just take that one little exercise. What are they doing? Not only are they learning about what that field or profession does, but they're learning a very critical leadership skill. They're learning the art of communication. There would be exercises strictly on communication building and rapport building and working on that skill, and then they work on it through this simulation. In our politics program, they would negotiate and draft legislation. And they'd have to negotiate that amongst themselves with differing interests. One group may be representing a certain part of the government or a certain department, or they may be representing a certain state that has certain interests that are diverse to the others. So they have to learn conflict resolution. So throughout all of this simulation, we have found that students learn best by doing, by being active participants as opposed to passive, you know, learners. As I like to use sports analogies, it's one thing to sit in the stands and you know, watch the other people play and watch the referees call fouls occasionally, but it's another thing to come out of the stands and put the uniform on and play yourself.
And now here's the challenge that I hear with some educators or people working with youth is that if you use an experiential model, you've also got to be comfortable with the unknown, sort of the unknown outcome. Because once you put students, you know, in the driver's seat, if you will, what's going to happen? You know, you've got to be more comfortable with the unknown. Is that something?
Well, of course, you know, but I think that is the beautiful part about experiential learning, which is they're taking it in a direction that it by necessity needs to go for them.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about experiential learning is you could literally do the same thing, the same exercise,
mm-hmm.
the same simulation. You could do it, arguably, over and over and over again and have a different result each time.
Mm-hmm.
Because leadership development is not, it's not a fact. It's not something we study, we learn, we understand it, right? That's memorization.
Mm-hmm.
So we can learn a fact in history, and once we've learned it, we pretty much, you know, we have it, and now we own it. Well, leadership skills are not like that. Leadership skills are something that we continually hone and work on every single day. You know, just take communication skills just as a simple example. We're in a time now where we're watching presidential debates and as the election unfolds, and you see people from the very first, if you began watching debates early on, and you see their communication style and skills and how that has developed and how much more refined and more honed they are, and these are people who have been in public life for years and years and years, arguably would be experts at that. But yet, at the very beginning, you could see them fumbling over you know, questions and answers. And now by the time they get to later stages, they're much more refined in their presentation.
Mm-hmm.
So what that tells me is that it's a never-ending process. It's not something that we just get it and we understand it. So the unknown for students, I think, is part of what they enjoy and what makes them get excited about it.
In your literature, you talk about developing leaders who are courageous. Tell our listeners about courage and leadership.
Sure. Well, you know, I think that courage is one of those things. Winston Churchill was a huge proponent and wrote extensively about courage. Courage is not about being fearless. Courage is really understanding that we are going to be afraid. And most of us, when we're honest and we ask our students, raise your hand if you've done anything before that you're afraid to do.
Mm-hmm.
And they all raise their hands. And the beautiful part is by that time, they're comfortable raising their hands, admitting to the things that they might otherwise be embarrassed to admit to, because no one wants to admit, oh, I was afraid to do something.
Mm-hmm.
So courage is about understanding that we're going to be afraid to do things, but when something is right, when something is the right thing to do, then we have to do it anyway. You be afraid and you do it anyway. And then the next time it becomes easier. We stand for something, we take the consequences, we deal with it, and the next time it becomes easier to do. And that's where we deal a lot with students, and we talk a lot about decisions. I believe that another really important aspect of our programs, and I think of any teacher when you begin to say, well, you know, what makes the difference in young people? How do you impact them in 10 days? How does a student go home in 10 days and their parents, and they show up and their parents say, you're different?
Right.
Well, there's two things. One is you inspire them because it comes from the inside, but how do you inspire them? Well, you know, we talk extensively about this idea about choices and decisions, and we believe very strongly, your choices affect your chances. The better your choices, the better your chances. Now, none of this is new, Tom. We're both in the leadership arena,
mm-hmm.
and we've heard these various things from different folks, you know, dating back hundreds of years to great philosophers have talked about this stuff. The difference is the context that we put it in and the package that you put it in, if you will,
mm-hmm.
because everyone responds differently, right? A seasoned corporate executive is going to need a little different approach than a high school student.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not going to teach them necessarily the same way. We may make the same point, but we're going to do it in a little different way. And I think as a young person, if we begin to just shift their, as we like to say, just turn their head slightly, right? That one degree may not seem like a lot right now, but if you take your hands and make a little V with your hands and you know, you started them in almost a prayer position, you opened your hands up just slightly, your fingertips 1 degree, it doesn't seem like very much, they're only an inch apart. But as you take those two lines out toward the ceiling and off to the sky, in 3 years and 5 years and 10 years, that 1 degree represents a very significant difference. So what we try to do is, what are those 1 degrees of distinction that we can make with young people? And one of those degrees is the idea of the importance of their choices now. You know, Tolstoy said something to the effect of, you know, the decisions you make today will determine your future. And young people really don't have a concept that the choices they make today will have an impact on tomorrow. They do have some inkling that leadership is like a light switch that they can turn on someday,
mm-hmm.
when they become president of their class or when they become the CEO, then they will turn on integrity or they will turn on whatever it is that
right.
they want to be. And what we want them to understand is that this is a process that they have to, it's like it's a toolbox that they have to begin to practice and work with these tools now. And making good choices and making good decisions every single day. Turn left, turn right, say yes, say no, go with this group, go with that group, go with the other group. All of those decisions are tiny little crossroads that young people come upon. And the pressures on young people today, I think, are far greater than they were when I was that age or when you were that age.
Mm-hmm.
The digital age has made them so much more aware of all the things that are happening in the world. Has made them so much more connected to all the things that are happening in the world. So on the positive side, they're much more aware of both the awesome things that are happening and the great tragedies and the great unfairness that happens in many times in the world. So we have young people that have a much, I think, bigger hearts to some degree. They're much more attuned and astute in terms of diversity. They accept people much more than past generations would accept people from other cultures, from other places. But on the other hand, I also think that they have a, they don't really feel or understand that the consequences of their decisions is at an early age. And the more that we can instill, and I think the more educators can focus on that. I'm a big believer, Tom, in repetition. I think mm-hmm. repetition is the mother and father of skill, knowledge, and understanding. And if you want somebody to really understand something, we can't tell them once. We have to tell them once, and then we have to tell them twice. We have to tell them, as my grandfather would do, 100,000 times.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have to do more than that. Then we have to show them. And then we have to model it. So when you think about, you know, what can people do, what can teachers do today, if I were to say the most important thing in taking young people to the next level and making them better, is to model leadership and
to be that leader.
Gandhi said it, you know, very clearly: be the change you wish to see in the world.
Yes,
right. And really, what he's saying is model.
Right.
If you want to create a great leader, then be a great leader. Act like a great leader.
I remember you just reminded me, in elementary school, one of my heroes, Chris, was my PE teacher. Right, so, and he used to talk about health and, you know, wellness and lettuce and all these great activities. Well, one day I was after school for some reason. I don't remember why. I remember what happened, though. I walked past his office, and he was smoking. And it just hit me. I thought, wow, he tells us one thing. And I might have been in third or fourth grade. I don't remember, but I was young. But the lesson was clear to me that what he told us, he was not doing himself. And it really struck me. I always remember looking at him and responding to him differently from that day on.
And you know, Tom, here the thing, and teachers probably know this, but it's something, again, just like many of these principles, we know them, but when we're reminded of them,
mm-hmm.
we begin to take action on them. And that's the thing about coaches, right? Is coaches, they never really tell us anything that we probably don't already know to some degree, but what they do is they put it in a context and they get us to take action on those things. And one of the things that we all have to be aware of is that they are always looking. They always see you.
Yes.
They're always watching. And not with a critical eye per se, that they're skeptical of, you know, when are you going to step off the stage the wrong way, but they want to see that consistency. And I think students are naturally skeptical
mm-hmm.
about people who go before them and try to in some way tell them how they should live their life. And if we're going to tell them how they should live their life, and not in the literal sense but more philosophically,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
then we have to model that every single day, because they're always watching. And one of the things that I tell students, and I would say this to teachers as well, which is, if we are not modeling the right behavior and we're not modeling the right attitude, then the way to do that, and I have students say to me, yeah, but, you know, I'm just not that way. I'm a different way. I say, well, here's the thing you first decide. How would you like to be? So make that decision. How would you like to be? Would you like to be like this person or act this or be this certain way? They say, yes, I would. Okay, then I say, then fake it.
Mm-hmm.
Pretend to be that way. And if you pretend to be that way long enough, you'll actually become that way.
Right.
Right? It's nothing different than in, you know, take a sport, take basketball. You say, well, I would like to shoot free throws like that other person. Well, it's one thing to say that, but I don't currently shoot free throws like that. I'm a terrible free throw shooter. So if you go and you shoot free throws every day for the next year and you shoot 1,000 free throws a year, by the end of that year, you may not be as good as the person that you're looking to become like, but you will be better.
Yes.
And so, you know, sometimes people look and when they hear me say, well, fake it, well, that's being disingenuous. That's not being really me. No, that's not true. That's nothing more than practice. That is practicing the excellence, practicing the greatness that you want to be, recognizing that we are not in all aspects of our life what we want to be right now, but we can become it simply by finding the right role model. And so for teachers, I say, you know, we have to be that role model every day. And going back to our, when you talk about how do you build teams, is that you have to instill, number one, the importance of being a role model and modeling for students. And number two, we have to be vigilant in insisting upon it.
Absolutely. Well, and I think that the other big piece of this that you're doing with Lead America is that you're giving it, students an opportunity to be around others who want to be playing in that arena. I think that anybody who wants to be a leader, you know, you should hang out with leaders. It's like if you want to play basketball, then you should go to the basketball court where people play basketball. You don't go to the tennis court if you want to play basketball.
Absolutely.
You know,
and it happens on at all levels of life, too, Tom. In a few weeks, there's going to be a convention in Davos of all the, you know, top leaders in the world.
Uh-huh.
And now, why do they do that? They go there because they recognize that there is something, and I'll use the word magical for lack of a better word.
Mm-hmm.
There's something magical about being around other people who are like-minded. Not, I don't mean like-opinioned. They all have varying opinions and views on things.
Yes.
But like-minded in the sense that they all are taking themselves and want to take themselves in the same direction.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things that students find magical, if you will, about Lead America and our programs, the Congressional Student Leadership Conference, the National Junior Leaders Conference, is that they are around other students who are like-minded, who want to achieve great things, who want to make a difference in the world, who want to do all these wonderful things, and yet they come at life from very different perspectives. And so that in and of itself, you know, you're someone from the Bronx, New York, and you're rooming with someone from Beverly Hills.
Mm-hmm.
And you're living in low-income housing, and you're there on a full scholarship, and you're there with someone in your room from Beverly Hills, whose father is a producer. Well, you're from two totally different worlds, and yet very like-minded in a lot of ways.
Yes.
And what they realize is that they have a lot more in common than they have different. And isn't that more what the world needs today? And when we talk about changing the world at Lead America, what we're really talking about is if I were to sum it up in a simple way, what we try to instill in students and inspire them about is that it's important. We want to turn that one degree that it's important to make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
That leadership is not about me. It's about me believing in something, standing for something, and making the world in which I live and you live a better place because we're in it. That's what leadership is about. And if we can create an entire generation of people who believe that that's what leadership is. Leadership isn't about me becoming the next level and then me accomplishing this and then me getting the bonus. But those things will happen. But leadership is about me making my school better because I'm in it.
Mm.
Me making my community better because I'm a part of it. Me making the choir the best it can be because I'm in it, not just because I have a great voice.
I'm reminded of an article I read about a guy who wrote about his Navy SEAL training. And, you know, early on, they were had a certain amount of time to get everything in their sleeping area just correct. And I don't know the exact language, but, you know, their beds had to be just a certain way. And this guy who was writing the article said he always, you know, initially did his perfectly, and yet the whole team was penalized because there were a couple people who weren't able to do it well. And a big aha for him was, as soon as he got his stuff done, because that part, that this was easy for him,
mm-hmm.
he turned and helped other people. And that was the big shift for him, is realizing that it wasn't about him succeeding, it was about the team succeeding. And you know, it seems like a simple shift. But, you know, when we're all kind of going through our day, it's easy to get caught sometimes to say, okay, how am I doing and what am I doing and this type of thing, rather than turning around and saying, oh, what's going on with everybody else?
Absolutely. Let me make two points on that, which I think are very interesting. One is, and you just mentioned the word caught, so I want to, it triggered something in me, and it's a great tip, I think, for teachers, which is to catch students doing something right.
Yes.
And I believe in catching people doing something right. We're sort of engineered a little bit, I think, or not really engineered. I think we're more conditioned in life to find faults with people.
Mm-hmm.
And coaching, and I guess this is a key thing, I think, for educators to understand, which is there's a difference between coaching and criticism. Right? Criticism is done with an intent. I believe it's the intention of making someone feel less than what they really are.
Mm-hmm.
Coaching, we may be pointing out something that someone could do better, or another way of saying is that they did wrong. I like to think about things that they could do better. But coaching is done with the intention of making someone better. And so it starts back with that idea of trust. Once they trust you and they know that the reason, you look at a football coach and he grabs a player by the football mask and brings him close and is yelling at the top of his lungs, but he's not doing it to make that player worse. He's doing it to make that player better. Now, that's not how we're obviously going to deal with students, but the point is
right.
that the intention of coaching versus criticizing. The other thing was, as we were talking about this idea of team and making a difference, it reminds me of I had the privilege of meeting John Wooden.
One of my favorite
famed basketball coach.
Yes.
From UCLA.
Wow.
And John Wooden said something very, very profound. He said, whatever you give, you keep forever. Whatever you don't give, you lose forever. Because you never have a chance to go back. And if you think about that, that's the thing that really is going to change society. It's going to change the world. It's going to change the way young people view themselves. It's what we give. I was reading not too long ago an article that was written by Ben Stein. Ben Stein was a columnist. He used to write a column called Monday Night at Morton's, which is a famous steakhouse in New York. And he would go to New York and he would sit in a steakhouse and then he would write about all these famous people. And he wrote this article. He stopped doing the article Mondays at Morton's or Monday Night at Morton's because he came to realize that while the people there were interesting and were famous and whatnot, that really wasn't what leadership, their importance in society was not as important or was not representative of what was truly important.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll just want to read exactly what he said. He said in this very long sort of article he wrote, he said, I came to realize that a life lived to help others is the only one that really matters. This is my highest use as a human being. And he goes on to talk about how, you know, he's never going to be as good an actor as Olivier or as good a comic as Steve Martin. But he went on to say that he could be a devoted father to his son, a devoted husband to his wife, and above all, a good son to his parents that have done so much for him.
Mm.
So, you know, these are the kind of things that if we want to truly have a society and a nation and a world that respects diversity, that understands one another, that, you know, truly gets along and then have a generation of people that can create that, that's how we're going to do it. We're going to instill and inspire these young people to think just outside of their own personal, you know, personal success.
Yes. Well, so as we wrap up this interview here, I'd like the people listening to know how they can find more information about Lead America.
Sure. We can be found first on the web, of course, www.lead-dash, it's the one in the middle, the hyphen, dash America, lead-america.org. That's our website. And they can contact us at 1-866-FYI-LEAD, L-E-A-D, FYI-LEAD.
Oh, I love it. Okay, good. So www.lead-america.org, and you'll also be able to find a link to this next to this recording if you're listening to this, and be able to go right to Lead America. If you're an educator, I strongly encourage you to take a look at what Chris is doing with these programs and get some information. I think you're going to be amazed at what can happen. If you're a parent, you need to understand what is happening at Lead America. Literally, they're changing kids' lives and creating leaders for not tomorrow, but today, as we've been talking about. So, Chris, I want to thank you, one, for the interview, and then also for the fantastic work you've been doing for 18, 19 years here.
Well, Tom, thank you so much. I appreciate it. It's been wonderful to be with you and your audience, and I hope we'll do it again.
All right. Well, this is Tom Heck with TeachMeTeamwork.com, and I've been talking with Chris Salamone with Lead America, and you can find more information now about Lead America at www.lead-america.org. And this is Tom Heck signing off, thanking you very much for listening. Bye-bye.